from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, bills to repeal West Virginia's educational standards and loosen up the state's campaign finance laws were up for discussion in the Senate. We'll have full reports on both issues. These stories and more coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Just one day after receiving the bill, Governor Tomlin has vetoed the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. The bill creates a 22-week abortion ban in the state. That's the point at which supporters say a fetus can feel pain. In his veto message, Tomlin wrote, "At the start of the regular legislative session, I urged members of the legislature to consider a compromise that would help us establish legislation that would pass constitutional muster. Having received a substantially similar bill to the one vetoed last year on constitutional grounds, I must veto House Bill 2568. In 2014, Tomlin vetoed a bill that would have established a 20-week abortion ban in the state. Tomlin, as well as some Democratic members of the legislature, believe an abortion ban is only constitutional at the 24-week mark. That's the time some doctors say a fetus reaches viability, or the point at which it can survive outside the womb. House Speaker Tim Armstead said he was disappointed but not surprised by the governor's action. House Minority Leader Tim Miley says he would rather see the legislature amend the bill to make it constitutional.
It's actually a fairly simple process to come back in, and we just vote on the bill again. And it takes a simple majority. So we will, there are two different ways to address a governor's veto. One is if you want to send the bill back to the governor, you can amend it in some way to try to address things that they're concerned about, the governor is concerned about. So that's one. That would not be the process that would be followed here. This would be just repassing the bill, and it would then not go back to the governor, and it would become law without his signature. So that's what we intend to do.
We can either bring the bill back and make it constitutional, or if the new Republican majority insists on overriding the governor's veto, I suspect that we will find this bill being challenged legally and costing the taxpayers a lot of money. So the choice is really in the hands of the new majority. Do we make the bill clearly constitutional, or do we override the governor's veto on a questionably constitutional bill that's sure to be met with legal challenges and a lot of incurring of legal fees at taxpayer expense?
As the speaker said, it takes only a simple majority vote of both houses to overturn a veto. Members of the Senate chose to forego a morning floor session today in order to work yet another controversial bill in committee. That bill makes major changes to election donations and reporting requirements in the state and has substantially changed since its introduction. The Senate Judiciary Committee continued their work on Senate Bill 541 today after contentious committee and subcommittee meetings on the bill this week. Senate Majority Leader Mitch Carmichael is the lead sponsor of the legislation and has told members of both the committee and full chamber his goal with the bill is to get dark money or outside third-party campaign spending out of West Virginia elections. As first introduced, the bill would have removed all limits for individual campaign contributions to a candidate and allowed corporate donations, but has evolved since negotiations began on the bill late last week and a major amendment was offered by the Senate Judiciary Chair Charles Trump today.
Chair moves to amend the bill to prohibit any corporate or union contributions to any political candidate. Is there a discussion regarding the amendment? Direct contributions by any union or corporation.
Trump says his amendment would not prevent unions or corporations from creating a political action committee to donate to a candidate, but they would not be permitted to contribute directly. His amendment was adopted. Carmichael was next to propose an amendment.
Strike all the tiers that are in the current form before us and institute the federal limits for all levels of candidates across the state. So it would be equal, and I believe the federal limit, and it would be indexed, but I think it's $2,600 to $2,700 now.
The bill, as amended in a subcommittee, set individual contribution limits in five tiers for statewide, each legislative branch, judicial, and local races. The limits maxed at $25,000 for a statewide office to as low as $1,000 for local offices. Carmichael's amendment was adopted by the committee and wiped all of the tiers from the bill. Next, Trump offered an amendment to prohibit political action committees from contributing to other political action committees. Today, many PACs move money from one group to another to hide donor information. His amendment was approved. Members of the committee also approved amendments setting caps on the amounts a state party or legislative caucus can donate to a candidate. Senators approved a $20,000 cap for those contributions, but capped the amount a candidate can contribute to a party, caucus, or county executive committee during an active campaign at $10,000. Members also added language that would make illegal any agreement between a donor and a state or county political party to earmark donations for a certain candidate or race. The largest amendment to the committee's bill came from Democratic Senator Mike Romano.
This is what we're trying to stop. In raising the limits and looking at unions and corporations, we want to stop this dark money from attacking candidates and creating a negative atmosphere in West Virginia about elections. That's what's keeping people at home, Republicans and Democrats. Nobody wants to be involved in these elections when it's all about how low can you go in attacking one of the elected officials. And I think it also keeps good people out of elections.
Romano proposed intense reporting requirements for third-party organizations who want to contribute to a candidate. Under the amendment, third-party organizations must file names of any donor who gives up to $250 with the Secretary of State's office and more information for larger donors. Romano's amendment raised some constitutional questions. Attorney Tony Magistro has represented the state during legal battles over election law in the past and says changes to federal law from Supreme Court decisions, specifically in the Citizens United decision in 2010, do not prohibit the state from requiring disclosure.
In Citizens United, I disagree with counsel who preceded me, it was explicit, an 8-1 ruling upholding the disclosure requirements in the federal law, which are similar to the ones we have here before this. I mean, people talk about the 5-4 Citizens United opinion, but on the issue of is disclosure constitutional, only Justice Thomas dissented. In fact, what the court said about disclosure was that it was a less restrictive alternative to banning the speech, to the speech bans that were overturned on the 5-4 result. So in essence, what the court said, because you can require disclosure, it's not okay to ban the speech.
Senator Robert Carnes disagreed with Magistro's assessment and spoke against the amendment.
Now, I'm not arguing against disclosure in general terms, like a 527 having to put on a piece of mail the name of the 527 that sent the mail out. I think that's perfectly appropriate. I'm arguing against the requirement to disclose the donor list. I think that it's one thing to know which particular group or organizations are behind something, but the individual donors do give money to these groups knowing that they're not going to have their information disclosed. It's a place that they can go and exercise their right to free speech without a concern about the retribution.
But Senator Trump supported it.
The chair is in the camp of those who think that the First Amendment to the United States Constitution affords protection for that. That's a protected right for anybody to engage in political speech. But the chairman does believe that it is reasonable and wise to require for the public to know who's behind this speech. And for those who raise money for that purpose to disclose who their donors are.
Romano's amendment was ultimately accepted by the committee, which sent the bill to the full Senate for consideration. The bill was reported to the full Senate this evening and advanced to third reading with the right to amend. Senators will put the bill to a final vote tomorrow. After intense debate in the Senate Education Committee yesterday, a subcommittee took up a bill this morning to repeal the Common Core standards in West Virginia. The bill was approved by members of the House of Delegates over the weekend, but is already facing some changes before members of the Senate consider it. Senator Donna Boley chairs the subcommittee on House Bill 2934. The Republican has called for years for the repeal of the math and English content standards the West Virginia Board of Education adopted in 2010. The bill is approved by the House, called for the removal of the standards by July 1st, 2015, and required the state come up with new standards by the following school year. State Superintendent of Schools Dr. Michael Martirano told the full Education Committee yesterday he needed more time to ensure the standards could be put in place, and repeated those sentiments before the subcommittee today. Subcommittee members heard his concerns and amended the bill to extend the repeal deadline by 1 year to July 1st, 2016, with the new standards in place by the 2016-2017 school year. Both Martirano and sponsor of the bill, Delegate Jim Butler, say they can agree to the extension.
It's a very, very heavy lift, let me put it this way. There's going to be a price tag associated with it. As a department, we've identified a fiscal note of approximately $113 million because we have to reestablish our materials of instruction, our assessments, the whole examination of that process. I feel it's a very ambitious schedule, but the reality is I'm about getting everything right. I'm a very thoughtful person in terms of approaching education in a very organized, thoughtful manner. And to do something which I define is to put something in place by July 1 is not only reckless, but it also destabilizes the educational system in West Virginia.
We all want to be thoughtful about the whole process and realize that things take time. And like Senator Boley said, we've been trying to get information on this for 2 years and have basically been stonewalled. So evidently they realize we're serious now about our children's education, and we're going to finally, I think, be able to work together and come up with some good standards for West Virginia.
The subcommittee also amended the bill to require the State Department of Education use some pre-2009 standards from other states as a blueprint for the new content standards West Virginia educators will craft. They include standards for both math and English from California, Indiana, and Massachusetts. In the House today, a bill allowing nonprofit organizations a one-day permit to sell alcoholic beverages to fundraising events passed. Liz McCormick reports.
House Bill 2466 allows nonprofit organizations the opportunity to purchase a one-day permit to sell wine, beer, or liquor produced at a licensed mini distillery for a day event like a fundraiser. The permit would cost $25. Delegate Tom Fast of Fayette County opposed the bill because he worried this kind of permit would allow drinking abuse and send the wrong message.
I understand the intent, but to just further advance the cause of alcohol, I'm not a prohibitionist, but to just further advance it in this fashion is actually a major step in the wrong direction. It's just greasing the skids down the slippery slope all the more, and I urge rejection.
Delegate Amy Summers of Taylor County supported the bill.
I rise in support of this bill, not to encourage alcohol use, but to support a request from my community that has a lot of elimination dinners and different types of activities to raise funds in our small community for all kinds of projects. And they would like to just be able to have one keg of beer there for people who choose to partake of that. So I encourage support.
House Bill 2466 passed 82-15. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
In a moment, we'll meet a family who's taking advantage of the Warriors and Veterans to Agriculture program. First, here's a look at what's coming up in the Senate tomorrow.
Among the bills up for passage, Senate Bill 325, to set deadlines for candidates to file financial disclosure statements with the Ethics Commission, and disqualifies any candidate who fails to file the statement by the deadline. Senate Bill 352, including a recycling service under the scope of cooperative associations. Senate Bill 366, the Patient Protection and Transparency Act, which requires information to be made available online to persons who purchase or are interested in purchasing insurance through the West West Virginia Health Benefit Exchange or an exchange website operated by the federal government. Senate Bill 385 to regulate transportation network companies such as Uber and Lyft and exempt them from oversight by the Public Service Commission. Senate Bill 84, transferring the operation of the Cedar Lakes Camp and Conference Center from the State Board of Education to a private, non-stock, not-for-profit corporation. And Senate Bill 585, to regulate taxicab companies by statute and to remove regulation of taxicabs from the authority of the Public Service Commission.
West Virginia lawmakers are always looking for ways to aid the state's large veteran population. Last year, they authorized a program that's taken off in the Department of Agriculture and making a difference in the lives of many military families. But the Warriors and Veterans to Agriculture program is making headway without a dime of state funds. Here this evening to tell us about the program and how it's made a difference in their lives is Eric Grandin, his wife Mary, and daughter Abigail. Eric's the founding member of the program and owner of Sugar Bottom Farms in Clay County. Thank you all for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Ashton.
So, Eric, let's start with the program itself, Warriors and Veterans to Agriculture. What is it that you guys do?
Well, it started out to be just five veterans learning how to keep bees to start an agricultural business has just exploded. Now we have 200 people in our program and training program, and about 50 of us have actually started agricultural businesses. And those range from standard beekeeping to produce farmers, market gardeners, livestock, and market value added products.
Tell us about your farm at Sugar Bottom Farms. What do you all do?
We do a little bit of everything. Sugar Bottom Farms got its name from one, the bees, the honey, the production, and two, we grow sweet sorghum for molasses. But we grow everything but asparagus.
And you sell to farmers markets? Who all do you sell to?
Yes, we sell to Clay County's farmers markets. We're adding Roane County Farmers Market this year, Clay County's Farm to School program, and just this morning we're going to add Kanawha County's School Farm to School program.
So Mary, talk about the family involvement in this program. Did Eric come to you and say, let's do this, let's get started, or was this a family decision?
He went to a program in Arkansas sponsored by a veterans group that got him interested in this. And I remember the day he came back, he said, this is what I want to do. Can we do this as a family? It was really exciting to see that spark back in his life again, to see him so excited about doing something again.
Now, Abigail, what do you get to do on the farm?
I plant with Mommy, and I do everything with Mommy.
And you water, and what else? You water the plants?
Uh-huh. And I feed the plants with Mommy, and I do this.
And your dad also keeps bees, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever go see the bees?
Well, no.
No, because they're a little bit scary sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can be a little scary. But Eric, I'd like to ask you about your background in the military.
Right.
You suffered from PTSD.
Right.
And I'm sorry, you were in the Army, we should say that.
That is correct.
Suffered from PTSD. And then found this program. Can you talk about the change that it made personally in your life? Take your time.
It's basically saved my life. It's very important to me.
Mary, can you tell us about the change that you've seen in him?
Well, after being diagnosed, I think at one point he lost his confidence in what he could do. In the military, he had a purpose, he had goals, he had things that he was doing every day. And I think after his diagnosis and things, there was a change. He didn't have that confidence anymore. And so by going into this program, there were people who gave him a new purpose and gave him a new look on things he could do. And just working with the dirt and growing something and nurturing that plant gave him that new lease on life.
So So, Eric, you all have met with the legislature. You don't receive any state funds right now.
That's correct.
Grant funding from the state,
but
not state funds. Right. Have you all met and tried to share how important this program is to you with them?
There are members of the program that have met with the legislatures. There's a couple bills up now that would probably help with funding our program, but I honestly feel that there's some members that don't want to see us succeed as we can, but we're going to succeed no matter what.
And we should say that this is in the Department of Agriculture. The program is in the Department of Agriculture, but you all work closely with the Department of Veterans Assistance to try to get these programs going.
Right. Each member that is in the group, I think they receive a small stipend for educational purposes. We are under the Department of Agriculture. I do want to say thank you very much to Commissioner Helmick, who is 150% behind us. But I think we do need funding for operating budget. Like I said, we've grown from 5 to well over 200, and the numbers could be even more if we had some funding. If Mr. McCormick had staff, there were 3 or 4 of him running around the state, because we seek veterans. We're one of the programs that just don't wait for people to come to us. We look for people like myself, because agriculture has become one of the known therapies for PTSD and TBI that has shown a lot of good, and so we go out seeking the veteran who would not normally go to counseling or anything like that, but you know, getting together with other veterans, learning how to, you know, just play in the dirt, basically grow your own food. And what we've seen is a relationship with the family, you know, to come back together. This has brought a lot of families together. I know it's done a great deal for my family. And, you know, that's what we're seeking, not for somebody to become rich in the agricultural field, but to seek us for the therapeutic value.
And I don't want to leave James McCormick out of it. James is your program director, who's in Washington this evening working on some other veterans issues, but he's got this spark to him. He's really making this program work.
Yes, he is. James, we met in 2013, and he's one of the reasons I got my pride back. He's got a lot of faith in me.
So what's next for this program? What do you see for the future?
I don't think there's anything that can stop us. Whether it be funding or not, we're going to seek people out there that want to support us 150%. Like our new partnership with Parson Valley Veteran Therapeutic Programs, which is a new partnership in Ripley in Jackson County. They have a 1,700-acre farm. It's a conference center. We plan on doing conferences out there, bringing the families in 100 at a time from whether it be West Virginia or all over the country. Right now, I plan on, James and myself, we plan on growing 5 acres of sweet sorghum for the Calhoun County's Molasses Festival this year.
Big things in the works for you.
That's
all.
That's right.
Well, Eric Grandin, Mary, and Abigail, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Now here's a look at what's coming up in the House tomorrow.
Among the bills up for passage, House Joint Resolution 13 to allow each county to increase the homestead exemption from $20,000 to an amount not to exceed $50,000. House Bill 2021 to create a procedure for drug testing for applicants or recipients of temporary assistance for needy family benefits. House Bill 2233 requiring that all agency rules be reviewed 5 years after initial legislative approval. House Bill 2366, that solicitation of a minor by an electronic device is a felony and shall be fined not more than $25,000 or imprisoned not less than 5 nor more than 30 years. House Bill 2638, exempting information about concealed weapon permit applications from the Freedom of Information Act. House Bill 2664, increasing penalties for driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs. House Bill 2828, to clarify the procedure for a child witness to provide testimony in a criminal action. House Bill 2939, to clarify and specifically include sexual misconduct by a student upon another student as warranting mandatory reporting to law enforcement. House Bill 2968, to enact enabling legislation for the Nonprofit Youth Organization Tax Exemption Support Amendment, passed by the voters in November. The bill exempts from tax certain properties owned by the Boy Scouts of America. House Bill 3016 creates a meth offender registry. A person listed on the registry would be prohibited from obtaining pseudoephedrine products without a prescription. And House Bill 3019, requiring official business and records of the state and its political subdivisions be conducted in English.
This has been the Legislature Today. Governor Earl Ray Tomlin today issued a statewide state of preparedness, mobilizing state resources, including the National Guard, to help keep West Virginians safe during potential severe weather. The governor says snow and ice are thawing and melting across the state. Heavy rainfall is predicted for many areas, and large amounts of snow could follow. The governor warns that this severe weather may affect many people across the state and may leave neighborhoods without power and other utilities. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org.